Broadcasting from the Vegas Video Network studios, live from the Las Vegas Strip, Covers.com presents Vegas Sports Day. And now from the sports betting capital of the world, here are your hosts, Teddy and the Professor.
It's Wednesday in Sin City, and you are watching Vegas Sports Day, the pulse of the sports betting world. I'm your host, Teddy Covers, joined as always by my co-host and colleague, the Professor, Dave Malinsky.
Coming up today, a little bit of a soundbite that we wanted to play for you but can't, but we're going to tell you that travel arrangements might be the key to breaking down the clash between Tampa Bay and Chicago in London. We're going to talk about a college football coach who's been miles away from being successful in the particular role that he's in this week, and a whole lot more.
Dave, first take on a Wednesday. What did you see last night that you want to talk about to start off the show today?
You know, Teddy, we've been hard on Mike Brown for a long time. Mike Brown, Cincinnati general manager. All we have to say is, well done, sir. Teddy, first thing on your mind.
Well, today, probably my least favorite day of the year, Dave, or certainly one of my least favorite days of the year. October 19th happens to be Kara's birthday. Now, Kara, for those of you who don't know, she's my better half. She's my baby mama. She's been my fiance since 2005, although still working on that marriage thing. But it's her birthday today, and that means, Dave, instead of watching the World Series tonight, you know what I'm going to do? Cirque du Soleil, bro. Cirque du Soleil. I'm going to be sitting there watching them dance instead of watching sports night. And I have to do it. There's 2 days a year I absolutely have to do it. I have to do it on Valentine's Day, and I have to do it on her birthday. Today's one of those days.
Which show?
We're going to see O. Amazingly enough, I've been in Vegas 14 years, never seen O yet. So.
And you couldn't get tickets for the late show so you could catch the game first? Or
it just didn't
work out that way. Or is it her choice?
It didn't play out that way, Dave. So we're going to be eating dinner and then watching a show instead of watching the World Series. So good stuff. Lots of fun. Of course, that'll transition us right into Market Watch for a Wednesday. Bottom line here, Dave, bookmaking 101, bookmaking theory is going to say the public wants to play on the better teams. And 98, 99% of all sports books in the world, whether it's a local bookie, whether it's an offshore book, whether it's a book here in Vegas, 98 or 99% of those books are going to deal with what we would call a recreational betting audience. A square bettor is the commonly used term. And recreational bettors and square bettors like to bet the better team in any matchup. So what we've seen so far this year is that the betting market's trying to set the line higher and higher and higher on some of these better teams in college football. And guess what? It simply hasn't worked so far. Not even close. Every Sunday morning, there hasn't been a bookie in Las Vegas or probably out there throughout the course of the country that isn't waking up with a big hangover because they're getting absolutely crushed every Saturday with the top teams continuing to win and cover.
Yeah, so far in 2011, BCS stands for Bookmakers Crying in the Streets. It's been astounding how well the top teams have done. Let's go to the chart and let's look at the top eight teams in this week's BCS standings, and you're going to see something absolutely amazing. Those top eight teams, 41-9 against the point spread, 82%, which means the teams that the public is looking to play the most are getting the money. Now, obviously, when we do charts like this, there's a little bit of backfit. You know, you get high in the BCS standings because you have been playing well, but it's not entirely backfit. Alabama, LSU, Oklahoma, Oklahoma State, a lot of these teams at the top were expected to be there. Teddy, at this point, if you're behind the counter, do you adjust even higher or do you let the pendulums of the sport come back into play for you?
Well, that's one of the biggest problems that the bookmakers have in the modern environment. I talked a moment ago about how 98% or 99% of all sports books in the world are catering to a recreational betting audience, and yet the entire market is set by those 1% to 2% of all sports books that are catering to the professional bettor, that are taking the huge limits. Those are the books that set the lines, and every other sports book, whether it's a local bookie, whether it's a smaller shop, whether it's a paperhead shop, whether it's the books here in Vegas, Every other book is forced to deal those same basic numbers that the books that cater to the sharpest of the sharps, are putting out. So it creates a real dilemma for any bookmaker. You can't set a number that's 4 points off the market, or 3 points off the market, or even 2 points off the market, Dave, because that's not a winning sportsbook strategy. But the bottom line is, the sharps are setting the market, the squares are beating it.
And there's a different element in play. And the reason why we say BCS top eight, not AP or coaches poll top eight, whole different game being played this year. Alabama and LSU don't have to worry about any style points anywhere. They're both undefeated. They'll play each other later. And whoever wins that game, if they go on to win the SEC, they're in the national championship game. But look at the other teams on that chart. For these teams, style points do matter. Which of them, if we have several that finish undefeated, and keep in mind that you could have five teams from the Oklahoma and Oklahoma State will play each other, but the rest of those teams all could finish undefeated. So who does get the style points? Who wins the bikini contest in this pageant to go up against the Southeast Conference champion? That's why it's tougher for the odds makers. For once, you've got some really good teams who actually have some incentive to tack on that extra score. We're not sure that it's going to happen again with Alabama and LSU. We're going to talk about Les Miles later on today's show, who we specifically don't believe will succumb to that. But this is a real headache because not only have the odds makers been short, but now the public wants to play on these teams even more.
Sure. I mean, the public has cleaned up betting on these teams, obviously. And in particular, Stanford has been a huge problem for the bookmakers. I did a show yesterday, a podcast with Chad Millman on ESPN.com, talking about, with Jay Cornegay from the Hilton, and Jay was talking about some of the parlays that had hit over the course of the last couple of weeks. And, of course, it's all chalk. You know, a little old lady bet $15, won $9,000, laying 20-plus in all of her games. And that's the typical parlay card that's been cashing, Dave. And, of course, these parlays, a huge source of liability for the sportsbooks. It allows them, or allows the average bettor to bet a little bit and pay a lot. And when we talk about Stanford, who's been the late game in a lot of these contests, this Cardinal, of course, a West Coast team, they've been playing at night on a consistent basis this year. And that late game Stanford win and cover has been an absolute disaster for pretty much every bookie in the country so far in 2011.
So now the question becomes on our end, at what point do the lines get high enough to step in against these teams? Here's one little thought we'll suggest, and we'll talk about this more on Friday's show. If you're going to make a play against one of these teams, you can still do it, still put your logic into play, but you might not want to bet as much.
We value your feedback and looking for your opinions. We're getting some great questions both in the forums and via email. Let me shoot that email address for you guys right now, sportsday@covers.com. We answer those questions on air every day. Of course, the toll-free listener rant line, 866-966-4599. We did not get an appropriate rant this week that we could actually play on the air without bleeping out every other word. So we're going to save that for next Wednesday. But that toll-free listener rant line is available for you to use. And, of course, get involved in the Covers.com community. Active threads right now discussing this very show, Covers.com/postingforum. When we come back, postmortem.
Are you looking for the latest odds, the fastest scores, the most important trends, and the best matchups and stats? Are you looking for the key late-breaking information that can make you a winner? Well, Covers.com has the answer. The world's largest sports betting community gives you a front-row seat in the heart of the action, from the opening lines to the final scores. If you want to stay ahead of the game, Covers covers the numbers.
Hi, I'm Chris Phillips from Talk Tales, and you're watching the Vegas Video Network. And if you stop by the studio, our producer Scott's going to buy everybody a drink.
Okay, guys, time to scrub up. Let's get those surgical gowns on. It's time for the postmortem, where we take you deep inside the game to show you things you should have seen, but probably didn't.
Let's start with a coroner's inquest. We're going to do this postmortem thing, Dave. We have to take this metaphor way too far. We're going to a coroner's inquest here. One of these settings We're going to be digging up the past and taking a closer look, which can shed some light on what we can expect to see going forward. East Carolina fans are not going to be happy to see this, because when we exhume that 2010 meeting between the Pirates and Navy, it was gruesome. A 76-35 win by the Midshipmen. Now, sometimes when we dig up the past, it's going to show us that what we think we saw maybe didn't occur quite as bad as it did in reality. But in this instance, Dave, boy, it was pretty bad for East Carolina last year. Let me take a look at these numbers. Pretty ugly for Navy. Dave, why don't you give those numbers instead?
I wanted to say exhume. I wanted to be the... How many chances do you get? Sitting here all my life wanting to put that into play. It doesn't come up at cocktail parties, obviously, very often. I wanted that. When we see a very one-sided event, you've got two issues that come into play. One, is there just simply a degree of dominance one team has over the other that will continue? Or two, do you have a team that will bring a revenge motive to try to get even for that bad loss? The reason we brought this one back up is, of course, the teams play again this week. Note that last year, as bad as that result was, that was on the East Carolina home field, and it was every bit as bad as the scoreboard would indicate. There were no flukes there. At Navy, over 500 yards rushing at 8.5 per carry, and they weren't trying to run up a score. 10 different players had rushing attempts for Navy. 6 different players had a rushing touchdown. They had the ball 14 times. They were only forced to punt once. Why was East Carolina so badly overmatched? They're in the middle of conference play. Navy comes in with a very unusual offense that you don't see in Conference USA. So they said, you know what, we're going to stay with our base defense. We're not going to go out of our way to game plan for this opponent and throw us out of rhythm for the other games coming up on the schedule. You saw what happened. But what happens this year? East Carolina's in the middle of conference play again. They're 2-1 in Conference USA. They have back-to-back conference home games on deck. They're not going to go out of their way to make up for that embarrassment last year. Wouldn't be surprised if we saw Navy once again moving the ball at will. We're supposed to be playing a sound effect here. Instead, you've got to settle for the video. We're trying to get this worked out, but the guy behind the curtain here at Vegas Sports Day is Scott Whitney. His daughter is finishing law school at Harvard, and we want her to represent us and work with copyright laws to see what we can do in terms of getting some of the audio. Here's the problem. She's very bright. She's got a good heart. And her focus seems to be more on doing something socially redeeming and responsible with her life instead of helping us get a few cheap sound effects every once in a while. So let's use the video of the clash. It's London Calling here, and we're going to see if maybe there was something in the past that an autopsy shows that could make a big difference on Sunday. The Bucks and the Bears both practiced yesterday. The Bears practiced in the shadows of Hallis Hall. The Bucks, to get to practice, their bus had to be on the left side of the road. Teddy, why is that, and what could we learn here?
Well, there's a bunch of things we could learn from this one, Dave, but the bottom line is Tampa Bay played here in London 3 years ago. Malcolm Gladwell, of course, with the connections with Manchester United. Gladwell, the owner of the Tampa Bay Bucks, and it seems like the NFL is very comfortable scheduling Tampa in London, more so than other teams. The Bucks are the first team to play their second game in London. And, of course, that first meeting, well, it was pretty ugly for Tampa. They got trounced 35-7. Admittedly, they played the Patriots in that ballgame, but it certainly wasn't a good showing for the Bucks. And what did they do that first trip across the pond? Well, they treated it like any other road game. They flew out on Friday. They got there on Saturday, went through their walkthrough, got up on Sunday morning and played the game. That was not a winning strategy for Tampa Bay. And this year, they decided to do a little bit different. In fact, as you mentioned, they're already practicing in London right now, spending the week abroad and trying to stay in rhythm as a team as opposed to dealing with the jet lag issues that so many squads face when they travel overseas. Here's a quote from offensive tackle Donald Penn. I slept all day Saturday the last time I was there. I was tired. It took a lot out of me the last time. It's a big-time adjustment. I'm real happy about how we're doing this year. So the Bucks changing things up because it didn't work the last time. We'll see if Chicago, who arrives later in the week, or actually on Friday going into Saturday, just like Tampa did last time, we'll see how that affects the Bears in terms of jet lag and that type of thing. We've seen Chicago take a lot of money in the opener here. Tampa opened the favorite. Now the Bears have taken the money. We'll see if that move is warranted.
When we come back, it's going to be time to open up the mailbox and clear out a few of the letters that you've sent to us. And when we go inside the numbers, we're going to tell you how that opening BCS graphic that we showed you might be turning around for one of those teams. You're watching Vegas Sports Day.
Oh, hello there. My name is Brandon Gooch Hahn, host of Awkward Silence 2.1. And when I'm not living vicariously through Chris Phillips, I'm on VegasVideoNetwork.com.
Livestream is your premier place to watch live events on the web, mobile devices, and connected TVs. See new events daily or broadcast your own at livestream.com. Livestream. Be there.
Before we go inside the numbers, let's take a look at some viewer emails. And before we get to the viewer emails, I want to let you know we're willing and comfortable protecting your privacy. We're only going to use first names with these emails, but if you want to let us know where you're from, we'll be happy to read that on the air, give you some love back in your hometown. So let's start with the emails. Dave, we have one from Storm. Storm asks, my book uses ties lose in NFL over-unders unless you buy the tie. How large an advantage is that?
Monstrous. If someone on the Las Vegas Strip did that, they wouldn't have any customers. There's no reason for someone to do that in this day and age. The accepted practice across the board says it's just wrong for him to do that. You might want to find someone else to deal with. It's an unfair advantage that he has. Our next mail, going to come from Andrew. I was wondering how I can make my own power ratings on college football teams. What is the process for doing this?
And this is a good discussion, Dave, and I'm going to look for some of your feedback on this question as well, if you would. But for me, the bottom line is the first time I ever started making power ratings, what I did was I started by copying somebody else's. And I went to the gold sheet. I looked at their numbers. I went to covers and looked at their numbers. I found a couple of other power rating numbers on the internet, put them all together, and kind of did an aggregate number. I made an average of those. And then I did that prior to the start of the season. And then I just started making my own adjustments, and I made them by hand. Of course, when you're making power ratings by yourself, it means you're going to have to go through every box score and every game recap, either personally by hand, or you're going to have that data sorted into an Excel file so that you can have a computer program that's going to do it for you. But the bottom line is, you'll get your prep done. You'll know what's going on with every team in the country, but it's certainly a time-consuming process, not something that I would say you would do lightly. David, do you have a take on that at all?
We do. One of the things that we try to focus on is understanding how the markets come up with most of their ratings. And on this show, we'll talk about the mathematicians a lot. Those that just take the final scores, some of the statistical elements, and crunch them. Actually let artificial intelligence do their work for them. Here's your big advantage in college football. The mathematicians are always going to be a little bit late. You don't have enough data points. The teams only play 12 games. Most of the teams now have one game that's off the board. So only 11 to use from. By the time the mathematicians get there, the season's about two-thirds of the way over. This is going to be an ongoing subject that we'll touch upon a lot, though, show by show.
And here's an email from Mike. Mike, hey, guys, enjoying the first couple of days, I was one of a lot of people that thought they had a winner on Monday night with the first score before 7.5 minutes prop between the Dolphins and the Jets. I have a book that claims to use ESPN.com play-by-play as the official grading, and you could capture a screenshot that showed there was 7:33 on the clock when the field goal was kicked. What's the proper ruling on this?
We saw this come up in a lot of forums on the internet the last couple of days. There never should have been any tempest about this. Here's the problem. When the ball was snapped on that field goal play, if you took a screenshot, 7:33. If you look at the play-by-play, it will show that because at that website, they show the play-by-play of the time when the play starts. But a score occurs at the end of a play, not when the play starts. So if you'll notice, the kickoff after that field goal comes at 7:28. That field goal was not in the first 7:30. Maybe it's just a little bit of structural problems in the way the play-by-play is laid out. But your score is not the time when the ball was snapped on the play. The score takes place at the end of the play. It was actually a proper ruling. There was not a score in the first 7:30 of the Monday night game.
Yeah, that being said, they should be using NFL.com, which is the official NFL, the arbiter of NFL betting decisions, as opposed to ESPN.com, which is not. And, of course, thanks again for those emails. We're going to answer them every day on air. That email address, again, sportsday@covers.com. Dave, time to transition here. Let's go inside the numbers. I know you've got miles and miles of things to talk about.
The top of this show, we mentioned how the teams near the top of the BCS standings have just been dominant against the point spread this year. Part of that being intent. If you need style points, and outside of the Southeast Conference, they need style points, you're going to run up as good of a score as you can. But it's a different story in the SEC. If you're Alabama and LSU, the margins don't matter. Just win the games. And in fact, if anything, you don't want to pile up scores that are that big. You've got a tough grind ahead in that conference. You want to keep your players fresh. And in that league of all leagues, you don't want to dump a 45-0 against a quality opponent that's going to come right back at you next year. This is something we've noticed with Les Miles throughout his career. Wins a lot of games at LSU, but he's not someone that goes for the jugular. So when we go inside the numbers for Wednesday, take a little bit of a look at Les Miles in those years in Baton Rouge. As a home favorite, there have been 23 times in Southeast Conference play. He's only gone 4-19 against the point spread. That shows you that Les Miles is out to win the game, but not necessarily to pile up the scores.
Coming up, the news you need to know in our Insider Six-Pack.
Traditional media believes that after about 3 minutes, you'll tune out. Most Vegas media companies think if it doesn't jiggle, you won't tune in. At the Vegas Video Network, we think both are wrong. The Vegas Video Network is the first and only live online broadcast network that specializes in insider news and expert views about Vegas. We combine great storytelling with the ability to watch when and where you want on your computer, mobile device, or television. Discover the real Las Vegas. Visit VegasVideoNetwork.com.
And now it's time for our Insider Six-Pack, where we drop six tidbits of knowledge on you for the upcoming weekend's football card. We're going to start with Oklahoma State, one of those BCS steamrollers that we talked about at the top of the show. And they may be the most explosive offense in the country, certainly according to Missouri Tigers defense coordinator Dave Steckel, who said, quote, "Halloween's coming and they're scary." Well, to make matters worse for Missouri, who faces Okie State at home this weekend, well, his starting defensive tackle, maybe the best defender on that defensive line, Terrell Rossano, suffered a sprained knee against Iowa State last week. He's not going to play this weekend. And, of course, defensive end Braden Burnett had a dislocated elbow in that same game. He's no better than maybe for this weekend. The depth up front can be a major issue for Missouri as they try to slow down this high-flying Okie State Cowboy attack that averages 83 plays per game. It's a fast-paced offense.
It's been a very difficult first season for John Embry at Colorado, only getting worse. The last 2 weeks on the Pac-12 road, Stanford and Washington rang up 100 points. A lot of them came easily. You could see that on the field, part of the reason for it. Jason Espinoza and Brian Lockridge, two guys playing major minutes in the secondary, just started playing defense a couple of weeks ago. Espinoza had been a wide receiver. Lockridge had been a running back. So what's the last thing Embry needed this week? Another defensive injury. This time it's linebacker Doug Rippey. He was the team's second leading tackler. He's going to be out. Not a good time to go up against that Oregon spread attack that they're going to be seeing for the first time. So what's the best way to slow Oregon down? You run the ball. You keep them off the field. But Colorado can't do that either. Guy who's really been the focal point of their offense, Rodney Stewart. He's going to be out for at least a couple of weeks now. Stewart had 113 carries so far this year. All other Colorado running backs combined, only 44. He was also second on the team with 28 receptions. He's a difficult guy for that offense to replace.
Let's talk Pac-10 football here for a minute. Oregon State and Washington State this weekend. And this game is being priced like it's a true home game for the Washington State Cougars. It is not, of course. It's being played in Seattle. Yeah, Washington State's still going to have the majority of their fans, plenty of alumni living in the area, but it's a much shorter trip for Oregon State. Really, when we talk about the interstates, from Corvallis to Seattle, a good hour less than it is to take the bus to Pullman. So perhaps less of a home field edge for Washington State this week, and we've seen that with some money coming in on the Oregon State side. That being said, boy, Mike Riley's team is really banged up, particularly on the defense side of the football. A couple of key injuries to talk about. Defensive tackle Castro Massiani, the biggest player on the team. He suffered a broken leg. He's out for the year. Of course, the middle linebacker, Fetty Unga, second on the team in tackles. He's no better than questionable this Saturday with a knee injury.
It's our special travel agent show on Vegas Sports Day. We've talked about that game on a neutral field in Seattle. We talk about what's going on in London. Let's add another one in there that you want to factor into your handicapping. Louisiana Tech will be on the road against Utah State this week. Tech is 6-10 as a road underdog since joining the WAC, and there's a good reason for it. Absolutely hideous trips for them to make from Ruston to the time zones that they have to play in. But before you factor that in, note that it might not be as bad this week. They were off last Saturday. That means that journey from Ruston to Logan may not be as difficult as it ordinarily would be.
Let's go to Detroit now, where the Lions have not officially ruled Jahvid Best out for this coming weekend's game, but they did pick up an insurance policy, of course, because Best has that history of concussions. They picked up Ronnie Brown from the Philadelphia Eagles. He's been sitting on the Eagles bench. Of course, the former, number two overall draft pick, number three maybe, had a decent career down in Miami, was a guy who ran the Wildcat as well as anyone in the NFL. But the injuries have really derailed his career. That being said, Ronnie Brown is the type of guy who gives the Lions a chance here. This is a Detroit team, 15 passing touchdowns, only three running touchdowns, and one of those three running touchdowns came on an 88-yard scamper. We saw all kinds of red zone problems from the Lions last week against the 49ers, costing the game. San Francisco bracketed Calvin Johnson with double team coverage anywhere near the red zone, and Detroit couldn't punch it in on the ground. So we'll see if the addition of Ronnie Brown, who's a nice veteran presence for that Lions locker room, very, very young, skill position talent on Detroit. We'll see if Ronnie Brown makes an impact either around the goal line or in the huddle in the locker room for this young Lions team.
Would it be tasteless to say that Al Davis is rolling around in his grave? Internet age, I'm not quite sure about that. You've got the forums and the emails. Let us know. Top of the show, we talked about Mike Brown and what a deal we thought he pulled off with Cincinnati, getting at least one first-round draft pick, possibly two, for a guy who was never going to play for the Bengals anymore anyway. Well, in order for you to get something good, that means someone else has to have done something bad. The Raiders made the trade. Hugh Jackson reuniting with Carson Palmer. Jackson was the Cincinnati offensive coordinator from 2004 through 06 when Palmer was there, and also Palmer's first 2 years at Southern Cal back in 99 and 2000. Hugh Jackson was on that staff as quarterback coach and offensive coordinator. But the Carson Palmer they just traded for may not be the Palmer that Jackson remembers. Palmer had reconstructive knee surgery 5 years ago. Since then, he's been little more than an average quarterback, not a lot of mobility in the pocket. They paid a premium price and were happy to do so. To quote Jackson, possibly the greatest trade in football. All right, Hugh, we want you to believe that. Believing it so much that we think that Palmer will start this week for the Raiders against Kansas City. And yes, you can see that you can get into the playoffs this year, the way your schedule lays out. But now you don't have a draft pick in the first four rounds of next year's draft. Your team might get to the playoffs, but you're not in a position where you can afford to not be adding some talent next season.
When we come back, we're going to put all of this information to work for you. It's money time!
I'm Courtney Leone, this is Vegas Video Network. You want me to mention awkward silence? Let's do that then, okay. Never been on set here before. I'm always out live on location for Awkward Silence 2.1. I'm Courtney Leone, and you're watching the Vegas Video Network. Good, better.
Okay, guys, let's go to money time, where we put all the information that we've talked about on the show to work for you. Oh, money time. Let's start in St. Louis, where the Cards -120 tonight, over under 7.5. Dave, what's your first thought on tonight's particular contest?
Yesterday, we talked about the series aspect of this, and we liked St. Louis because we thought it was a value. Again, not saying that St. Louis is going to win this series, but if you could take $1.40, or let's say you're taking 7-5 on a coin flip, you're going to let them flip that coin over and over and over again. Now we'll go to the dynamics of tonight's matchup. First thing we'll be focusing on over the course of the day is the weather in St. Louis. This could have a major impact. The very latest forecasts that we have before we went on the air, first pitch temperature around 47 degrees, winds 15 to 25 miles an hour with gusts, but a tricky wind to read. It's almost foul pole to foul pole from left to right, which means it can knock down some balls that are hit down the left field line, but could help some balls hit down the right field line. First place we're going to start today, C.J. Wilson. C.J. Wilson was a reliever until last year. Last year, got up to over 200 innings, had a good year, faded down the stretch. 223 innings for Wilson this year. Was he ready for that? Maybe not. Look at Wilson in the playoffs. 0-2 with an 8.04. Given how much he struggled in the playoffs, a sign of fatigue. And a guy from Newport Beach, California, pitching his home games at Arlington, Texas. Teddy, what do you think of C.J. Wilson at 47 degrees?
I don't know that that's going to be the type of temperature that's going to help C.J. Wilson bring his A game. And if you remember, C.J. Wilson last year in the playoffs for Texas, he got three starts. The Rangers went 0-3 in those ballgames. So this is a converted reliever and a guy who's pitched an enormous number of innings. That's a Cardinals offense that's kind of clicking on all cylinders. They certainly were in their playoff series against Milwaukee. We'll see how Wilson fares tonight, although St. Louis does have a slight bias towards righties. Their record against lefties and their batting average OPS against lefties, not quite as good. It's worth noting, Dave, one of the stats we like to quote on this show, pitches per inning, PPI. It tells us how quickly that starting pitchers are being able to move through a lineup, whether they're facing struggles or whether they're kind of just mowing hitters down. And C.J. Wilson hasn't had less than 18 pitches per inning in any start over the last month, which may not be an impact here so much in game one, but it's a Texas starting rotation. Only twice in their 10 playoff games have they seen a starter finish the sixth inning. So this bullpen could get a fair bit of use here in the playoff series and quite possibly tonight.
Might as well get you guys used to a lot of the numbers we're going to talk about. Teddy brought up a really good one with PPI, pitches per inning. When you see a pitcher fall away from his comfort zone, yeah, it's obviously a sign you're getting hit a little bit because innings extend. But when you're getting tired, you're not finding the strike zone quite as quickly. That's been an element with Wilson. Let's bring another statistic into play. Difficulty of batters faced. In all sports, there's always this aspect of difficulty of competition. It makes a big part in how your bottom line statistics look. There were 104 pitchers this year that worked at least 150 innings. C.J. Wilson, on that chart, 104th. He was dead last. It means that he faced the weakest group of hitters of any of those major league pitchers. Now, how do we calculate this? We think the best is on-base plus slugging, which means you're taking the on-base average and the slugging percentage of all of the hitters that you face, putting them on the chart. C.J. Wilson had some good numbers, but he was dead last on that chart.
And meanwhile, we talk about Chris Carpenter, who's been just phenomenal down the stretch. You know, he beat me a couple of times, and I wasn't real happy about it, but we're actually able to cash with him in his last start, Dave. And the bottom line with Carpenter, 5-0 with a 1.89 ERA over his last eight starts. And that includes three shutouts, and not just three shutouts against the Phillies and Brewers, the two best teams in the National League. Chris Carpenter has been on top of his game. And that St. Louis Cardinals bullpen, I don't know how Tony La Russa does it. For much of the season, that Cardinals bullpen was mediocre at best, lousy at worst, blowing a lot of games late, no sure thing as a closer. All of a sudden, September, October, the Cards bullpen has been phenomenal, and Tony La Russa, who works the matchups as well as any manager in baseball, has really done a number getting this bullpen to perform well. Don't know if we'll see a whole lot of bullpen tonight with Carpenter on the hill, but for St. Louis, that bullpen strength is surely going to be a factor in this World Series.
Well, by now, you could probably see where we're going with this, especially if you watched yesterday's show. Total tonight's going to be a little problematic because we're going to need a better weather forecast later in the day. If the line holds steady, we may not decide what we're doing with the total till right before the game starts. You'll have the cameras there. You'll see the flags at that point. But now the question comes up. Okay, we're going to pop up a Cardinal graphic in a few minutes, as you probably have guessed. But if you played the Cardinals for the series and you're thinking about the Cardinals today, what do you do from a money management standpoint? Teddy, Cardinals for the series in your pocket. You also like the Cardinals tonight. Full units both ways, or do you play one a little bit lesser because now you've got a pretty big extension going?
Well, in general, when I'm playing an underdog, like St. Louis is for the series, I'm going to put a little bit less on that wager. I'm going to look to get a return of my normal unit wager. Similarly, when I'm playing a favorite like St. Louis is tonight, I'm going to bet a little bit. I'm going to bet in order to get that one unit back. So I would actually probably have a little bit more on tonight's contest in terms of actual dollars outlaid than I would for the full series price. But the return on the series price is going to be greater than what we get for St. Louis. What about yourself, Dave?
Well, the problem you have here, obviously, is double jeopardy. You know, if you've got the Cardinals for the series and you're going to play the Cardinals tonight, if you lose the series or game one play, your series ticket's in a lot of trouble. That means you almost have a little bit too much going in one instance. So make sure that when we talk about the advantages of Carpenter over Wilson, in my mind, that was part of a series element. If Wilson is tired in game one, Wilson's tired in game four or game five. So I'm playing game one just a little bit lighter. We're going to use those advantages over the course of the series, not so much for tonight's game, especially when you examine the price points of taking $1.40 as opposed to laying $1.20. But having said that, let's get the drum roll going in the background. Since we're still not allowed to play the Clash, Teddy, where are we going?
It's time for the play of the day for Wednesday, and that's going to be the St. Louis Cardinals -120 tonight. Game one of the World Series against Texas. It's the only game in town from a betting perspective, and we're involved. St. Louis -120. And that's going to wrap up the Wednesday edition of Vegas Sports Day. For Malinsky, I'm Sobranski. Thanks for watching. Enjoy the games and good luck. We'll see you again tomorrow.